Hi, everybody. It's Lisa Coffey, and this is Ancient Wisdom for Modern Seekers, our monthly class on Vedanta and all things about the spiritual life and how we can grow spiritually and help each other in this Sangha as we gather together. And today, I have a very special guest, Swami Mahayogananda from the Vedanta Society of Southern California. And he is a resident Swami, and he's kind of the death expert at our temple, because he's an expert on all things related to the afterlife, and he's done all this research on near-death experiences. So we wanted to talk to him today about what we can learn about how learning about near-death experiences can help us to grow spiritually and get closer to God and to Source. So welcome, Swami G. So nice to have you here. Thank you.
Great to see you, and great to see all of my other friends. I know most of you, and of course, some of you I can't see, but I see your names. So good. May I start with an opening chant, and that's particularly because today is the birthday of Sri Chaitanya. You know, in our temple, we always, in the morning, we have this prayer, chant the name of the Lord and his glory unceasingly. So I'll chant the first verse in Sanskrit, and then I'll read the translation. It's a beautiful prayer composed by Sri Chaitanya. Om Chito Darpanam Arjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidyavadhu Jeevanam Anandambudhi Vardhanam Pratipadam Purnamrita Swadhanam Sarvatmasnapanam Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Chant the name of the Lord and his glory unceasingly, that the mirror of the heart may be wiped clean and quench that mighty forest fire, worldly lust raging furiously within. O name, stream down in moonlight on the lotus heart, opening its cup to knowledge of thyself. O self, drown deep in the waves of his bliss. Chanting his name continually, tasting his nectar at every step, bathing in his name, that bath for weary souls. So that's the first verse of the Chaitanya Shikshashtakam, the eight verses of instruction. And this is his legacy to us, this practice of chanting the holy name.
It's beautiful. And ever since you shared it with me, I've been doing it every morning as part of my practice too, because it's so moving, you know, to engage those emotions and really verbalize what we are feeling inside. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Good. Okay. So today we're here to talk about near-death experiences. First question for you is, how did you get so into this topic, and how did you do the research? I mean, why well, this?
The research is easy. There's lots of books and there's lots of websites. There's two main websites, actually, which I can share with you. But I'm not sure what started it, but I was fascinated. And what fascinates me is that the people who have near-death experiences, they're normal people like you and me. They're not saints. They're not mostly meditators even, or spiritual seekers. They're just regular people. And yet they have these profound experiences and come back, and they die and they have profound experiences, and then they're resuscitated. They come back and they tell us about them. And many of them have verifiable elements, which means, for instance, someone has a heart attack and dies in the emergency room, and he or she rises above the body and sees the team working on their body. And here's a perfect example. There was a man who had a cardiac arrest and he became unconscious, and He floated above his body, and he watched the workers, the paramedics work on his body. And they put in a breathing tube. And before they could put in the tube, they had to remove the man's dentures. Okay. So she removed his dentures and put them on the crash cart. There was a little drawer on the crash cart. That the crash cart means that cart with all the implements in the emergency room. Put them in a drawer on the crash cart, put in the tube, and then they ended up resuscitating him. Well, problem, his dentures are missing. So 1 week later, that nurse on her rounds, she ends up coming into the room of this man who's still recovering. And he sees her and he says, "Oh, you know where my dentures are." He recognizes her. He hadn't seen her since since he was unconscious in the emergency room. He recognizes her, tells her, "Oh, you know where the dentures are. They're in the drawer on the crash, on that card, aren't they?" And so they could retrieve the dentures. This is what we call verifiable. There was no way that he could have known what happened. He was entirely unconscious. And yet, so that adds a lot of support to the veracity of these experiences. They're not just imaginings, because the skeptics will try to say these are just, it's just the imaginings, the spasms of a dying brain. The brain is lacking oxygen, and so it imagines these things. It's all false. That's what the skeptics say. Well, how do you explain this then?
Exactly. Yeah, and I've heard people say, oh, they're hallucinations, or it's just dreams, you know, or that kind of thing. But
that's why the research that's being done now is, it's important. They ask questions like, how would you rate the level of your consciousness during the experience? Was it like normal, or a little less alert than normal, or more alert than normal? And 70% of the response say, no, more alert than normal, hyper alert, hyper aware, hyper conscious. Hallucinations are disjointed. They don't make sense. These experiences are coherent. They make sense.
Interesting.
They fit together. So the skeptics are going to doubt. That's called the scientific popery, as Swami Vivekananda would put it. there's the popery of the church that says, our way alone is the true way, and this is the doctrine, and you have to believe. And science pretends that science says, supposedly, that no, we test everything, and only after testing do we come to a conclusion. But this is also scientific popery. It's because the scientific view, the materialist view, which is so widespread, is consciousness is merely a byproduct of neuron activity, of chemical and electrical activity in the brain that creates consciousness. And if that's a fundamental axiom of the materialist view, they simply cannot accept this, because these kind of experiences show what we as spiritual seekers and Vedanta students, etc., all believe, that no, consciousness is not dependent on matter. It's the other way around.
There you go. Good. So this is one of the big spiritual takeaways we can get from these experiences that other people are having. Do they feel like, has there been any research done on how spiritual they feel? You know, like you're saying, they feel more conscious, they feel more alert. Do they feel more close to God, or do they get religious after they have these experiences?
They don't get religious, they get spiritual. Mm. Many times they get less religious, and they get and they realize that all the doctrines and dogmas of their religion actually are kind of nonsense. Especially the more narrow religions, the sort of fundamentalist traditions, some of those teachings are, well, for instance, the teaching that God will judge us, you know, that God is a vengeful God and God will judge us and all that. What people experience, well, let's take it a little bit.
You're frozen now. Uh-oh.
About 12 elements, we can say, which appear in near-death experiences.
Okay.
And they are, not every experience will have all of these. We'll have a few of them, but in order of increasing profundity, shall we say. Okay, the first experience that, and these have been collated by a man named Jeffrey Long, not the Jeffrey Long who's a Vedanta person, but Jeffrey Long, a radiation oncologist in Louisiana. And he has collected thousands and thousands of near-death experience reports, mainly through his website, the Near Death Experience Research Foundation. Mm-hmm. And so he can analyze the data with computers and all that, how many people experience this, how many experience that. So number one, out-of-body experience. We already talked about that. Feeling of leaving the body, seeing the body below them. And sometimes not even recognizing the body at first. Seeing a body there and then, hey, I have a shirt like that. Oh, wait, that looks like me. Oh my God, that is me. That kind of experience. People describe that kind of experience. So one, out-of-body experience. 75% feel a separation from their body. Heightened senses, increased clarity, experiencing intense colors, hearing at a distance, feeling the emotions of others who are in the room.
Wait a second. You said heightened senses, but aren't the senses connected to the body?
Okay. So the physical sense organs are connected to the body. But the senses themselves, the possibility of perceiving light and sound apparently is not only physical, because people report they see, they experience some kind of sight. So it's not obviously with these physical eyes, but it's with some kind of subtle eyes that they can see and they can hear, and sometimes they can smell. So but it's with very vivid colors, very vivid sounds they can hear.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Then number three, third element, intense and generally positive emotions or feelings, especially peace, love, joy.
That's good. I mean, it would be pretty bad if it was the opposite.
Well, you know, we can mention that there are a small percentage of people who have experiences which are frightening to them, or even terrifying, even hellish, we can say, a small percentage. So we don't, you know, in Vedanta, we do accept that there may be realms. We say there are different heavenly realms, and there are also some hellish realms. And some of that fear might be, some people describe experiencing a void. And it's a wonderful, peaceful experience. But for some people, that might be frightening to experience a void. And in some cases, actually, people see demons and things like that. It's rare, very rare, but it does happen. So
interesting. I wonder if that has something to do with their karma, or, you know, how nice a person they were in the life. If they expect to go to heaven or hell or whatever, they know they did wrong.
Right. Hard to know. In one case, that reported a hellish experience, the people were really in a very bad mental state. They were abusing drugs and very negative minded, and they had that experience. Mm.
There could have been some brain damage then, even, you know? Do you think?
But these experiences are not brain based.
Okay.
Because the consciousness separates from the body. So they're not brain based. And we'll go more into that when we talk about what it means when when cardiac arrest.
Okay.
So then the fourth element is passing through a tunnel, into or through a tunnel. And that's the stereotype, right? I went into a tunnel and there was the light at the end of the tunnel. Actually, it's not that common. 30% of respondents reported entering a tunnel, only 30%. But it is an element that often comes. Encountering a mystical light or a brilliant light, sometimes described as being of the nature of infinite and unconditional love. That's the fourth. That's the fifth, rather. Number six, encountering other beings. This is also fascinating. Oftentimes, mystical beings like a guide, a spirit guide, or a guardian angel or something like that, who meets the person and guides them. Not always, but it's a common element. Or
is it ever somebody they know?
I was about to say it's deceased relatives and deceased friends.
Okay.
Yeah, very often grandmother or parent, grandparent or parent or uncle who has died or close friend who has died. And this is interesting, and this is another part of what of how these get verifiable in two ways. One, for instance, a young girl, she had a near-death experience and she met a lady. A lady was there who comforted her and loved her and helped her to go back to her body. And she was telling her parents about it, and there was this lady. And well, one day they were looking at the photo album, and the girl's grandmother, there was a picture of the girl's grandmother who had died before she was born. And she said, "That's the lady. That's the lady who met me." So like that, it's verifiable in that we meet someone who actually, she had never seen the picture before. She met the lady. When she saw the picture, she recognized her. And in other cases, people meet someone who they didn't know was dead. Say an uncle who has just died, and the person who is having the near-death experience wasn't told that the uncle has died. And they see them on the other side, and they came back and they say, "I didn't know Uncle Ted had died." And, "Oh yeah, we didn't tell you about that." So that's another verifiable, okay?
Wow.
Yeah, so.
And that has to be some comfort, I think, you know, seeing a familiar face. I guess when you're going through that experience, you don't really know what's happening to you. It could be, you know, confusing. And then you see a familiar face.
Yes.
It's comforting.
Yes, yes. Though it's not necessarily exactly a face. I guess it's a face, but sometimes they just know it's a person without seeing a form. Other times they may see the form of the person as they were sort of in the physical life. Both are possible. Number seven, an altered sense of time. Time and time often slows down or even stops. And people have a sense of past and future merging into the present, into the eternal present.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight, this is also fascinating, is the life review, experiencing how their actions affected others in the life. And the description of this, oftentimes they describe how in a very short period of time, they go through, this is part of how the time stops, they experience the entire life, every action. And not only what I did, but how my actions affected others, how that kid in third grade felt when I stole his lunch, how, you know, all those things, feeling everything. So
that's like when people say, their life flashed before their eyes. That's what you're saying. But almost with no sense of time or space, it could be, you know, in a second or so.
Right. And because we're freed of the body, it seems that we're also freed in many ways from the limitations of the body and being tied to earth time.
Wow.
So this is a fascinating. The life review is not that common. About 20% of people report having this kind of life review.
But that's also interesting that you said that they report that they felt how they felt at the moment and they felt how the other person felt. That's like confirmation of the, you know, the unity of all of us, the oneness of all of us.
Yes. And also really of the idea of karma, that there is a law of karma and that our actions have effects.
Yeah, cool.
Which is basically what the law of karma says, that every action has effect on ourselves and on others.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ninth element, encountering otherworldly or heavenly realms. And some of these are described as like super nice places where the grass is completely perfectly green, no dead blade of grass, and the trees are perfectly beautiful and flowers that you never saw so beautiful and the sound of the bird. So kind of like heaven. And Vedanta also accepts that there are different kinds of heavenly realms. The only thing that Vedanta reminds us is that, at least according to Vedanta, they are temporary. Mm-hmm. And just as this earth is temporary, heavenly realms, we may stay there for a long time, but ultimately it's temporary until we realize we attain illumination or we attain union with the divine.
Yeah, so we should think of it like a vacation, a reward, a vacation.
Right.
But you still got to go back to work.
Right, right. The 10th element is encountering or learning special knowledge. And some people describe it like a download, like a computer download, like instantly downloading vast quantities of knowledge, and describing how they finally understood everything. It all makes perfect sense. Things about like the nature of God, the purpose of life, remembering past incarnations, knowing the remaining work that one has to do on earth. And it's also interesting that oftentimes this special knowledge, people remember that they knew, but they can't remember.
Oh.
They forget. And there have even been cases where they're told that you will forget this. They're told what their mission in life is. They're told, well, you have a certain mission in life and this is what it is. But now you're going to forget it because you have to find it out on your own.
Oh, no.
So,
that's frustrating.
So, all right. Number 11. Encountering a barrier, a point of no return. They come to a place where they realize, if I cross this, there's no coming back. And sometimes it seems like an actual physical thing, like a barrier, that if they cross that barrier, or else it's a realization that if they go any further, if they go any closer to the light, there's no coming back.
So at this point, do they feel like they're making a choice to go forward or go back?
Sometimes. Sometimes they're given a choice. It's clear that sometimes people are given a choice. You can go back or you can stay here. What do you want? And obviously, if they're given a choice, they all choose coming back because we're hearing about it.
But
it's quite possible that most of the people who are given the choice decide not to come back. And that then we don't know about that. But oftentimes they can see the paths of their families, their loved ones, both with them and without them. They can see what will my children's life be like without me. Maybe my children are still they're still children. They still need me as a parent to take care of them. If I leave now, I can see how their life will be. And if I stay with them, I can see how that's a very strong pull for mother, especially mothers, but mothers and fathers both, even more for mothers, to come back to the body.
Yeah,
and
so they decide to
come
back.
But there are other cases where people don't want to come back and they say, sorry, it's not your time. You have to go back. And people even, there's cases where people shout, no, I don't want to go back. No, 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 please. No, no, no. Bam, back in the body. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. So a couple of points about this now. The after effects, transformative. People are transformed. It often takes many years to integrate the experience. And in some cases, especially in the case of children, research shows that children who have had near-death experiences, and a lot of children have had, and don't... aren't given support to integrate that, often face a lot of difficulty later. And even to the point that the suicide rate for NDE experiences who had their experience as children is higher than the general population. Whereas the suicide rate for people who had NDEs as adults is lower than the general population, much lower.
Yeah. So they don't get the support because people don't understand what a near-death experience is or what the impact of it is on a person's life.
And oftentimes if a child starts telling her parents, I was out of my body. Oh yeah, you had a dream, honey. You mm-hmm. you imagined it, but that's nice. Then they don't try again.
Right. That's sad. Well, it's a good thing people were writing these books and doing the research and, finding out.
Yes.
It's probably much more common than even, is in the books. The books is just a small representation of what's probably happening.
Well, I should say that I have not had a near-death experience. People often ask me because I gave these talks on NDEs, but they are much more common than you would think. In every group that I've given this talk, at least in physical groups, now I've given it yesterday on Zoom, and so we didn't have a chance, but in every group that I've given, someone, at least one person has come up to me afterwards and said, I had one myself. I've heard a number of people's experiences firsthand, and the estimate is 3 to 5% of the population has had an NDE, a near-death experience. So I would not be surprised at all if one of you would have had one that you didn't tell me about it. You don't have to tell me. I don't expect you to tell us about it, but.
But at the end, if you want to, feel free to share, because it'd be interesting for us.
And one thing that strikes me when you hear someone relate it themselves, a few things strike one. One is the conviction that it was true, that it really happened, that it wasn't just an imagination. Yeah, it really happened, this conviction. And you sense that's very common among near-death experiencers. They don't have any fear of dying, because they know that it's just leaving the body. There was a man, let me tell you a little about this. This was, I think, perhaps the first near-death experience I actually heard. I was in Boulder, Colorado, and I was talking with a friend, and he introduced me to another friend, an older gentleman, who had a near-death experience, and he was one of the few who loved to talk about it. So he had converted to Catholicism, he was a devout Catholic. But he told me about his near-death experience. He said, yeah, I was carrying rebar, you know, the construction rebar, the long bars. And I walked under some power lines and I was electrocuted. And I was out of my body, and I saw my body lying down below, and my coworkers were working on me, doing CPR on me. And then he said, and I felt this tremendous peace. If you could say the most peace that you ever felt in your life was like a grain of sand, this was a whole beach. So that's how he described it.
Wow, I love that. That's beautiful.
And that's about all that he described to me. And perhaps that was the most of the experience. Maybe it ended there, I'm not sure. But as we parted, he said, well, it was great to meet you, and I'll see you again. And if I don't, well, I'll see you in heaven. that kind of beautiful conviction.
Yeah, great attitude. So that makes me think of something. So what is the difference between a near-death experience and an out-of-body experience? Because I guess with the out-of-body experience, you don't have to be near death to have it. But are they similar experiences?
So apparently they're similar experiences. In fact, there are, on the near-death experience website, there's a section of it which collects, archives experiences that are like a near-death experience, but in which the person was not actually dead or near death. Sometimes they call it a fear-death experience, where out of terror one leaves the body, and nothing actually, like a car accident about to happen, and the people describe, I left my body, and they have a full-blown near-death experience, and somehow the accident is narrowly averted, and they come back to their body and there's no injury, nothing whatsoever, but they had clearly left their body. Sometimes it happens at night and people think it might've been a dream, but there's also some evidence that actually this is caused by sleep apnea. And sleep apnea is a fairly widespread problem in the world, apparently. And you can actually stop breathing for a long time. And so some of the near-death experiences might be caused by that.
And also probably, I think, with surgery, like if you're under anesthesia, couldn't that cause like an out-of-body experience?
Right. Sometimes. Most of the near-death experiences that we read about during surgery, the person has actually died on the operating table. Though sometimes the surgeons are not willing to admit it, but eventually they'll admit, well, yeah, we had a problem for some time. Oh, but it's okay, don't worry, you're fine. And they try to paper it over.
So, yeah. And I've had an out-of-body experience when I fainted. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's still losing consciousness, you know, but I didn't lose consciousness. I was just fainted.
You lost consciousness of your body?
Yes.
I see. And did you see your body from above?
Not really. I mean, there was no form, but I wasn't seeing me. I was seeing other people, talking to other people. I was having a conversation with other people. So it was, it felt as if I was in my body, but I wasn't, because I fainted. So then when I like unfainted, got woke up, I was like, oh, we're, I thought I was, you know, I thought I was in a different place. I forgot that I was in that one place.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It was really weird.
Yeah.
But good.
One thing that I can mention is that when the near-death experience, when the heart stops pumping, it flatlines, as they say, right? The EKG or ECG, the line, it goes flat. The electrical activity of the heart goes flat. That's why they call it flatlining. And what I didn't know is that after 10 to 20 seconds, all the other organs in the body also stop functioning because there's no blood, no energy. And the brain also flatlines, the EEG, the electroencephalogram flatlines. So that's why cardiac arrest is because if someone didn't die, then the skeptics can say, well, they're still alive. So their consciousness is, if they believe that consciousness is based on brain, then brain is still active. So they could have had an imaginary experience. Whereas when the brain flatlines, there's no possibility of conscious experience being produced by the brain. That's why those are particularly powerful. They furnish very solid evidence that consciousness is not dependent on the brain.
Wow, that's amazing. It's interesting how science and spirituality end up in the same place. You know,
this is one of the areas where the two really are coming together in this.
Yeah. Area. I mean, they take totally different paths, but they end up in the same place, right?
Yes. I think I should read a couple of, let me read one that sort of covers a few of these elements that we've discussed, just so you get a sense of how, if you haven't read any of these, what it sounds like. And this was a man who died from ventricular tachycardia, which it means it's an arrhythmia of the heart when the certain ventricles start pumping too fast and it can't pump enough blood. And then the heart eventually stops. So he was very obviously very sick and brought to the hospital. And then he describes what happened next. He says, next thing, I am out of my body. I'm up in the air, like 8 feet, looking down. I'm me. I have the same mind and I'm looking around. I looked over to the left and someone was there, like a friend, someone I knew for a long time. So this is like the guide or somebody. He doesn't know who it is, but it's a friend. He knows it's a friend. I did notice that time was all crazy. A second was an hour and an hour was like a second. My overall thought was, wow, how cool. I looked into the hallway and there were these paramedic guys there. There was a lady who I thought was the ambulance driver. They all looked really concerned and I thought, wow, what's going on with them? Then I saw my partner. He was there in the hallway and he looked so short compared to the paramedic guys. He looked horrified. I was thinking, why could they possibly be so upset? I'm laughing because he's perfectly fine. He's out of his body and he's perfectly fine. And he doesn't understand what the problem is. Then he says, I see a hospital table down below and a guy on it. He has a beard. He kind of looks like me. Slowly, I realize it is me. It is me. At the same time, the person next to me sent the understanding. And I said at the same time, I'm dead. There were people working on me and I'm sensing this big, bright light behind me. I know there is no roof or walls behind me, just like a big void. I could sense it. Black on the outside with light in the middle. I feel great. I'm sensing there are all these people standing behind me, but I never turn around to see them. I can just feel them. I feel like who I was always supposed to be. Everything was so clear. I could see so well out of both eyes. I understood and felt what everyone in the room was thinking and feeling. Everything made sense to me. I saw myself like some old clothes laying on the floor. Here he's talking about his body. He says, I saw myself means I saw my body like some old clothes laying on the floor. And I really didn't want to put them back on. this precise idea is given in the Bhagavad Gita, where Sri Krishna says, we shed our bodies like garments, like old worn out garments. We take them off and we put on new garments. We put on bodies that are new. We take off our old bodies and we put on new bodies. So just like this, this was his precise experience. I saw myself like some old clothes laying on the floor and I really didn't want to put them back on. I really didn't want to go back to my stupid life. Then I'm being pulled fast, backward and up and back into the air. Me on the table is disappearing way below. I felt absolute and total love and acceptance. Unconditional. God, I guess. Obviously not a very religious person before this happened. God, I guess. Like nothing I have felt. I can't explain it. I just don't have the words. Then, in a second, I felt what everyone was feeling in the room, Adam, the doctors, the paramedics, and I felt all the students I have ever worked with in my life at the same time. He was a teacher. Now I am noticing that the me on the table, means his body, is being held in the arms of some. Some lady. And I stop moving backward and start moving back down towards me, down towards his body. She is holding me like a mother or something. I didn't believe in angels or in Virgin Marys, but something like that. And the feeling was amazing. It just so touched me and it moved me like nothing else ever has. Then I just thought really ambivalently, whatever, I'll go back. The next second, I am slammed into my body. My eyes open and I'm hurting again. Then I pass out.
Wow.
So this is a typical near-death experience with a lot of the elements that I mentioned before, the out-of-body experience, seeing the body from above, meeting some beings, a being, and then some other, and then this mother who healed him, and experiencing unconditional love and acceptance, remembering all his students. That could be part of the life review, remembering all the students he's ever worked with. And a real ambivalence about coming back to the body, but yet once agreeing to it, being just pushed right back into it.
Wow.
So it's a fascinating, these are, I could read, to me, some of these reports actually read like scripture. What are scriptures? The scriptures are the reports of spiritual experiences from saints and sages. And these are reports of spiritual experiences by ordinary people like you and me, who are not saints and sages, and also, interestingly, who don't become great saints afterwards. They still have their difficulties in their life. They still have a lot of the same struggles they had, but they've lost the fear of death. And they generally become much more interested in spirituality. They take up meditation. For some people, they become deeply spiritual and perhaps become saintly. But it's not an instant transformation, which makes me think of the Vedanta tradition that we have to prepare ourselves. A lot of spiritual life is actually preparing ourselves for the realization. If it's dumped on us, it can be overwhelming and it can be difficult to process and difficult to digest. And people often get divorced after a near-death experience because their spouse, they've changed so much and their spouse just doesn't understand. They no longer can connect. So sometimes it's not that it's all roses. So you get a near-death experience and it's all great. Experience itself generally is all great, but afterwards it can be really difficult.
It's how it affects your life afterwards and hopefully in a positive way, you know, like you said, no more fear of death, because then they understand there really is no death. It's just a moving from one body to another. Like Krishna says in the Gita, you know, changing your clothes kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, have any of you guys in our group, do you guys have any questions for Swami or anything you want to share? I think this would be a good time to, so Ray's raising her hand.
Yeah, I have a small question. So out of the 12 elements that you mentioned one of them being an ultra sense of time where the past and the future kind of come into the presence. So I don't know if this is even a question related to the topic, but how would you explain deja vus? Or are they related?
It could be. Yes, that our true nature is beyond time. So from the Vedanta standpoint, our true nature is infinite existence, infinite consciousness, infinite bliss. Time, not subject to time, space, and causation. When we're connected with our bodies, we're in time and space, and causation. Causation means one thing causes another, and things happen in sequence. If you go beyond time, then there's no question of things causing. There's no time. There's no time. There's just the eternal now. Then nothing causes something else. So it's a very high state. It's not something we can actually think of because we think in time. So how do we think of that which is beyond time? But we can talk about it and understand. That's why sometimes the spiritual teachers, they speak in sort of riddles and parables and to try to give us a sense of what does it mean to go beyond time.
I wonder if there's like, it sounds like deja vus to me almost sounds like an outer body experience while you're in the body, but maybe it's like an out of mind experience. Like you're out of your personal limitations of space and time, like getting a glimpse into that eternal now.
Deja vu, usually when I think of deja vu, I think of you experience something and suddenly you feel like you've experienced this before or you've seen this before. And I'm taking it that you have had that experience.
Oh yeah, all the time. So, I had, while you were talking earlier, I was like, wait, did this already happen?
So I don't have that experience much, but it's interesting. One possibility is that it's a past life memory. Mm-hmm. That comes back if we come to a place and we feel like, hey, I've been here before and I know, or I know about this thing or that thing. In fact, a story is told of one of our Swami Yatishwaranda. He was in Switzerland and he visited a small mountain church and he paid respects at the altar. He was, of course, a Hindu Swami, but we're broad, so Christian church, no problem. And there was a priest there and he asked to see the list of priests who had been the pastor at that church. He just wanted to see, and they had a book. The Europeans are good about keeping records like that, especially the Swiss probably. So sure enough, they had a book with the names of all the priests that had ever served there as the pastor. And so he went back and back and back and he stopped at a certain name several hundred years before and said, that one, And the priest there asked him, do you know him? Swami said, I was him.
Wow.
So he was an illumined soul. He could easily remember his past lives. But it's fascinating that he was there in Switzerland and seeing that church, that would have sparked that memory. And so he just wanted to see and check. So I don't think this is printed. I'm not sure if this is a printed thing. It's been, maybe it's been printed, but it's certainly been an oral tradition of Nityashwaranji.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I have another question, if that's okay with everyone.
Of course. Of course.
Okay, so my question is, you also mentioned about how NDEs are more common in younger people, like children, more than adults, no?
No, only that among children who have them, it's extremely important to help them process it, that otherwise they tend to have a lot of problems. Gotcha. If they don't get that assistance in. But it doesn't seem to be more prevalence in any particular, just that it's common at all ages.
Okay.
But I do understand that children, because they're so like fresh into this mind-body thing, tend to remember past lives more easily. And
Yes, but
as they get older and more conditioned into this is my life, you know, society's conditions, then they forget.
Teach each other fear.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's what I was trying to get at, because I misunderstood him, but he clarified what he meant. But that's what I was thinking. Like, is it more, if it was that situation, would it be more common because kids are more naive and are not taught fear? Like, you know, when they say, oh, throw a baby into a swimming pool and they're just going to swim, as compared to an adult, we're going to take a few steps of like, oh my God, can I do this? My heart, my sugar level, you know, we have all these things. So yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about children who remember their past lives, even children who remember in great detail, this is not very common, but it is, there has been enough research done verifying that this is true. Children can remember, in some cases, minute details about their former lives. They can go to the place, they can meet their relatives, they call them by the nicknames that they called them in the previous body, and know all the details. Even these kids forget as they grow older, when they turn 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, the memories just disintegrate. And they remember that they remembered. They can remember that I used to know about my previous life, but they can't really remember the details anymore. And that's, perhaps it's because in this life, we have to lead this life. We can't lead our last life. What if we had to live all the previous lives we've already lived in this life?
Right. Well, there's all those stories about finding the, you know, next Dalai Lama or the next sensei, or all in Buddhism, where they go looking for a little child that is that guy reincarnated. There's a whole documentary on it. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was so good. Swami Sarva Priyananda had recommended on Netflix, you know, and I'm like, oh, it was so good. And then they find the little kid and you're like, this is like a little baby. What's he going to know? But like when they put the other lamas, mala beads and other mala beads, the kid goes right for the one that was his out of all the choices, you know, or whatever it was, his bowl, all these bowls, he goes right for his particular bowl.
Yeah.
And that's how they knew it was him. And then they take him to the monastery where all the other monks are, and they're all saying hi to him. And he remembers exactly what to do, like waving his arm and doing all the stuff that the other lama did exactly. Yeah, there must be something to it, right?
Absolutely. I'd like to read a little bit of some of the really transcendent experiences people have. Yes. Let me read a little from, it's this book, a wonderful book by Anita Murjani called Dying to Be Me. She had a profound near-death experience. She died of cancer, and there is no way really that she could survive. I mean, it was taken over everything, completely metastasized all over her body in Singapore, and she died. And she had this profound near-death experience. And within about 3-4 months after it, the doctors could not find any cancer in her body whatsoever. They had no explanation for it. But in her experience, she realized why she had the cancer and why she didn't need it anymore and whatever it was. It's a very fascinating book. But the experience she had of divinity is just wonderful. And let me read a little bit of this. So she's died. She's left her body. As my emotions were being drawn away from my surroundings, I started to notice how I was continuing to expand, to fill every space until there was no separation between me and everything else. I encompassed, no, became everything and everyone. I was fully aware of every word of the conversation that was taking place between my family and the doctors, although it was physically some distance away outside my room. I knew the frightened expression on my husband's face and could feel his fear. It was as though in that instant, I became him. Simultaneously, although I hadn't known of it previously, I became aware that my brother Anoop was thousands of miles away on an airplane, anxiously coming to see me. This was corroborated afterwards. Anoop was on the airplane. She continues, there I was, without my body or any of my physical traits, yet my pure essence continued to exist. And it was not a reduced element of my whole self. In fact, it felt far greater and more intense and expansive than my physical being. Magnificent, in fact. I felt eternal, as if I'd always existed and always would, without beginning or end. I was filled with the knowledge that I was simply magnificent.
Yeah.
How beautiful. How beautiful. We are magnificent. This is what Vedanta also tells us. Anita had a glimpse, at least, or a good experience of her true nature as eternal, as without a beginning or end, and as magnificent. It makes me think, I have a couple of quotes of Swami Vivekananda. Man stands on the glory of his own soul, the infinite, the eternal, the deathless. As this Maya veil becomes thinner and thinner, the inborn natural glory of the soul comes out and becomes more manifest. Mm-hmm. So that's she's corroborating this teaching of Vedanta that who we are is glorious. We are magnificent. We are infinite spirit of the very nature of infinite love and peace. And so she experienced that directly. Now, I won't say that all the experiences go this far, but quite a number go this far. And she has a real gift for putting it into words. And so it becomes poetic. It reads like scripture.
That's amazing. I love it.
Some of the, how much time do we have? Oh, 5 minutes. Well, yeah. We should probably wrap it up.
Does anybody else have any questions, anything you want addressed while we have time?
I think someone in the chat put in a question.
Okay.
Let me have a look.
Is there research on COVID and near-death experiences?
I think I may have seen one report, a COVID patient, but it's still pretty recent. People often take a long time to report the experiences. Mostly they don't report it right after it happens. Often years later, they feel ready to share it at least on the website that I mostly look at.
Yeah, they probably have to process it and, you know, decide if it was that real.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally people do it right away, but usually it takes some time. I would, since we have just a few minutes, I should mention, I'd always like to mention this as part of the discussion on near-death experiences is, it sounds so good, it sounds so nice that why not just kill ourselves and just go and have that experience? Several things to mention. One is that people who have tried to commit suicide and had a near-death experience, don't try again, okay? They realize that no, it's not a healthy way of attaining the disembodied state of getting out of our body and attaining the divine, and so please don't do that.
Better to just meditate instead.
Don't consider suicide. It's not an option for getting this kind of experience. Partly because suicide is an extremely negative act, and it negatively impacts a lot of other people, loved people who are close to the person who commits suicide. They're really destroyed. That they're so hurt and so it's such a difficult thing to bear. So that's something we should keep in mind. If ever we feel tempted to say, well, I've had enough of this. I just want God, let me kill myself. The case of Sri Ramakrishna is different. He had such intense yearning for God, such a burning yearning that at a certain point he felt like I can't take it anymore. And he was moving to cut his throat with a sword. And then the mother revealed herself to him and he had this profound spiritual experience. But that kind of case is different. If we're not feeling that intense spiritual yearning, then it's not, most people who commit suicide, they're feeling depressed and wanting to escape their life, not yearning for God. So let's not think of suicide as a valid option. And let us, oh yeah?
I was thinking that the people that you discussed were people who had a death experience of the body. Now, we are over here, all spiritual aspirants, we have accepted the fact that the body is temporary. It's going to end at some point. Death is inevitable, right? So there's another, this is the death of the, thinking of the death of the body. But then there's another layer, which during spiritual practices, we say stilling the mind, or rather dissolving of the mind. And progressing towards that, that can also happen. And where it can happen, like death of the mind, but it can be a very, it opens up a lot of doors.
Yes, the death of the ego.
Frees oneself from the cage of body and mind. And perhaps some of the experiences of the outer body might be similar, but it definitely has a more profound effect once that is in the scriptures. I mean, when people have that, then people can have a different understanding about life and who they are. And
in fact, there are some near-death experiences where people find their egos also dissolve. And have us, we didn't have time to read those, but I think we have to go because your service is starting now, I believe, your Sunday service. So,
the Camarillo one starts at noon.
Oh, it starts at noon?
Yeah, the Camarillo one starts at noon, but your service starts at 11.
Yes, I
have no pressure to, I'm not involved in the service today. Swami Satyamayananda speaking. So, there'll be 5 minutes of opening music and whatever, so we can relax it just a little bit.
Well, I wanted to say what I think one of the takeaways is that if we want to experience being closer to God, closer to spirit, experiencing the oneness, we don't have to have a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience. We can meditate. And by getting into that practice, we can get those glimpses and have that peace, that profound peace that we're looking for.
Absolutely. And that's the teaching of Vedanta also, that we're not waiting for death to experience God. We are aiming to experience God, experience the divine, experience our own magnificence here and now in this life. And I should also mention that there are people who, as I think I did also, I did mention people who have these experiences, not brought on by disease or anything other than their spiritual practice. And there are a few of these reports on the website, the Near-Death Experience website also, of people who are meditating and had these profound experiences. So I think it's a wonderful reminder of, first of all, it's a corroboration of the spiritual teachings that, yes, the scriptures are not just imagining. They're telling us the truth that our true nature is eternal and that we can experience it in this life. So
it's wonderful.
And it's a lot of fun to discuss, to do this as a sort of discussion. So I thank you, Parama. And you're muted. Yeah.
I just have one question. First of all, a statement. Amazing. This morning was absolutely amazing and very verifying in so many ways. And the part about suicide, too, is just really enlightening. The other thing is the mystics, when they left their bodies, do you know anything about the mystics and their experiences they come back with in that oneness, how they connect with the oneness? And does it have anything to do with near death?
Not sure I quite understand. You mean the mystics means that?
The mystics who seem to come back and see everything. There is no time and space, and there is only the oneness, and everything that's in us is in every single living thing in all the universes.
Right.
You know anything about that at all and its connection?
Well, I mean, we can look at the life of someone like Sri Ramakrishna, who lived in that state, especially towards the end, when all he saw was God. And he would say, there's a passage describing how he was sitting in his bed with his room full of disciples, and he was dying of cancer. And he said, I see only God. I see that my young disciple there, Latu, he's sitting there with his head in his hands. But actually, I see it's just God, covered over, as it were, by a skin. It's just seeing everything is God. And in fact, he went, his disciples entreated him to please pray to the Divine Mother to heal his cancer. And he said, I can't do that. I've put my mind, I've dedicated myself to her. How can I then think of my body? And will please for our sake. So he went to the mother and he said, Mother, I can't eat. Can you make it so I can eat a little? And she said, aren't you eating through all these mouths? In other words, who are you? You are in all. You are in all bodies and all beings. And so anyone is eating, you're eating. And so he hung his head in shame. He couldn't say anything else to the mother. So that's the kind of experience he had. Certainly his ego, there was an ego in name only. It was like the illustration is given of a burnt string or a burnt rope. Have you ever seen a burnt rope? If a rope is burned, it still looks like a rope. It holds its form, but one puff of air and it disappears. Mm-hmm. So the ego of the mystics like that are like that burnt rope. It looks like there's a person there, an ego, but actually it's just God there.
Awesome.
Thank you, I'm in tears. Thanks.
Let me read a little interesting, let me read as a closing, experience by a woman named Annie, who died in a car accident. And it's a really touching passage. She begins to, after she sees her body, she leaves her body, she sees it from above, and she begins to rise, accompanied by a guide. And she says, as the extraordinary event unfolded, my escort and I ascended into the sky. Unconditional love became more concentrated. The awareness filled my inner consciousness with joy, comfort, and ecstasy. A blinding, magnetic, brilliant light focused on my forehead, drawing me closer and closer to the light that was beginning to encompass my whole being. Unconditional love intensely flowed everywhere without effort, honoring and glorifying every cell with a total awareness of physically, emotionally, and mentally being within love at last. Every cell is gently caressed in the all-abundant love, honoring and glorifying every bit of who I am. Love that flowed without any conditions or effort, omnipresent and very real. The love abundantly flowed without any restrictions, conditions, or commitments. As we ascended, the clutches of the dramas that ego entertained disappeared. Ego's continual habit of self-sabotage was non-existent at last. The veil, which separated me from experiencing the reality of unconditional love, was effortlessly dissolved. Mm. So it's nice. Really, really moving.
Nice.
So let us take this as an inspiration to live from that place of love as best we can. And
absolutely, life is good.
Let me, if you have just a moment, I'll paste the website names here.
Oh, wonderful.
And in the chat, let's see how I do that.
Terrific. There you go.
This is the one that the Near Death Experience Research Foundation, and there's a link there for read the experiences, and there's one called exceptional experiences, and there's also a link for submit your experience. So if you have had an experience, I encourage you to contribute to the research by submitting your experience there. And this website has not quite so many, but has also a lot of inspiring near-death experiences. And this, the International Association for Near-Death Studies, they sponsor different groups of discussion groups for people who have had the experiences to give each other support. So those are two references.
Terrific.
And I guess that thank you so much, Parama, for inviting me. And
thank you for being here with us. You are a rock star, Swamiji. We love
not
you
at
very
all.
Much.
Not at all.
And thank you everyone for participating with us today. We'll be back next month on the fourth Sunday in May. And Swami Satyamayananda is going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking about mandalas. And those are those really pretty circles, like this is a mandala. But he's going to talk about all of the spiritual significance to them. And we're going to explore like how we can make our own mandalas and everything. So I think it'll be really fun and cool. So thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Shall I close with a chant?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
We'll do the usual chant. Lead us. Om Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Mritangamaya Aviravirma Edhi Rudrayate Dakshinam Mukham Tenamam Pahinityam Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. From the unreal, lead us to the real. From darkness, lead us unto light. From death, lead us to immortality. Reach us through and through, and evermore protect us from ignorance by thy sweet, compassionate face. Om, peace, peace. Peace.
Wonderful. Thank you, everyone, and enjoy your holy this weekend. And I'll be on with Reverend Pam on Facebook Live if you want to go to the Center for Spiritual Living, Pleasant Valley Facebook page. We'll be doing East Meets West. Pam's going to be talking about Palm Sunday, and I'm going to be talking about holy. It'll be fun. Nice. So join us there. All right. Thank you, Swami.
All right, Daima.
Hi, everybody.